prologue. It had been a late night at work. My feet dragged under me as I made my way to the subway station. I wondered to myself if all the late shifts were worth the paycheck. The pay was all right, and I never had to budget, but the back pain was catching up to me. I ought to pick up some more Excedrin on my way home, I thought, forcing my feet down the stairs. What am I even doing anymore? What happened to that childlike wonder I used to have? Wasn't I going to go somewhere with my life? I glanced at my phone. 11:13. I sighed. Guess reality beat me into submission at some point along the way. What did I want to do? Scanning my card, I made my way through the turnstiles to where the subway would meet me. How did I forget what I wanted to do? Did I get too caught up in my work life? I had passion, ambition. That's why I started working here. I wanted to make enough money to do something, didn't I? Sitting down on my bench, I took a deep breath, pulling out my phone to check for any notifications. Two awaited me, both being random Facebook notifications from a group I'm in. As I opened Facebook, a rumbling from the left side of the station introduced itself. Checking the time showed 11:16. Guess they're early, I thought, putting my phone back in my pocket. A gust of wind fluttered my clothes, raising goosebumps as the train slowed to a halt. It took longer than usual to stop, but eventually, with one cart left in the station, I made my way to the train. The door opened as I approached, and as I got in, I glanced around. There were a few other people in there, all looking just to the side of me, as if they were trying to avoid eye contact.
Guess the conductor's having an off day, huh?
I chuckled, not receiving any response. A few seconds passed in awkward silence as I made my way to an empty seat. I took a few more looks around, but everyone seemed to be doing their own thing, waiting their turn to leave. Another stop came, and an older, bald man with a fedora got on, sitting next to me. A couple more stops came and went, the cart filling exponentially, like everyone forgot it was midnight and decided to go for a train ride. At the next stop, the old man turns to me. I glanced over at him, noticing he was wearing a well-fitted charcoal suit.
Can I help you?
I asked politely. The man spoke, looking just to the right of me.
I'm not sure you're on the right train.
I got a little nervous, wondering if I'd gone to the wrong side of the station somehow.
Is this one not going south?
No, it is. He chuckled. You just hopped on a little early, didn't you? The trains are never late here, you know.
I let out a short snort, relaxing in my seat.
Okay, buddy.
I turned back to my phone, waiting for my stop to come, then waited. Time kept on passing, but no more stops came. Before I could get up to call for the next stop, my eyes weighed me down. As if I'd been hot-shotted with 50 cc's of melatonin, I blinked, but my eyes never opened. The sun stung my eyes as I woke. Nothing felt real. Standing up was a chore. I was shaky. Trying to focus my eyes, they sent out an error code, potentially informing me they would focus on whatever they wanted. I made my way to the door, lightheaded. I wondered if I caught something. Stumbling out the door, I was greeted with an above-ground station midday. There were a lot of people getting off, but no one was getting on. My mind was so foggy, I couldn't tell where I was, but something wasn't right. Subways didn't go above ground, did they? Stumbling down the platform, the extent of my disorientation unknown to me, until I tripped over myself, collapsing to the ground. I felt nothing as I staggered back to my feet. Careening my way to the sidewalk, a couple people asked me if I was feeling all right. Unable to speak, I passed them by. Energy was too precious to come by, so I forced all my effort into focusing on a street sign. Calden Avenue. Was that supposed to be? I pulled out my phone, putting my hand over my eyes to block out the unrelenting blaze above. 8:17. I tried to do the math in my head to figure out how long I'd been out, but it was too much for my fogged mind. The world was a haze. What's going on with me? I thought, checking to see how many bars I had. Though it was hard to tell from the blur, there was definitely an X over the service bars. I let out a shallow moan, putting away my phone. A few people looked in my direction, but quickly went back to themselves. After 30 minutes or so of waiting for a taxi, I decided stumbling my way to the nearest hospital would be my best interest. Time marched along. Every 10 minutes, the buildings seemed to repeat themselves. My head fog improved as the buildings encompassing me encroached and smeared into one another. After a couple hours passed, darkness settled, setting down for an afternoon nap. Am I hallucinating? It seemed real enough, so I kept walking, trying to see if there was anywhere I could stay while I waited for a hospital to arise. Eventually, I came across an empty parking lot with a large sign. I looked up, hazily. Hotel Grande. Glancing around, there were no other buildings nearby. I was in the middle of a forest. Too exhausted to find my way back to the city, I headed for the entrance. Opening the door, I found a middle-aged man reading a newspaper sitting at a desk. Dragging my feet to him, I found I couldn't read what was on the paper, like it was another language. Focusing on the page, I could tell it was English, but it was like my brain couldn't piece the letters together. Can I help you?
Sorry. I'd like a room.
The man glanced up, not putting his newspaper down. Another one of you, huh? Room 215 is open. He went back to reading.
How much?
What?
I'm asking how much for the room.
My tone was harsher than I meant, but his reaction was cool. Look, kid, it's open. No charge, no key. Just go to room 215, go to sleep, and everything will be fine. Disturb me again, I'll throw your scrawny ass out.
Accepting his response, I shrugged the charity off, giving him a gentle, thank you, before stumbling up the stairs to the room.
When I got there, the absence of smell struck me, as if the air and carpet were their own entity outside space-time. Not even a hint of cigarette intruded, despite the room's shabby appearance. Exhaustion overwhelmed me as I approached the bed. Collapsing onto it, I didn't even have time to pull a blanket over me before everything went dark. I didn't dream, but when I woke up, I didn't feel much different. I was a little less exhausted, but the fever persisted. Heading downstairs, I walked out the door. I thought I heard the man mumble something, but I couldn't bring myself to care. As my steps carried me one foot at a time, I felt I was on roller skates, flowing forward rather than stepping. The only thing tethering me to reality was the motion under me. Whenever I stopped, my surroundings would dim, and I'd become faint. The blurs that passed me by left me with mere impressions of what they could be. All my focus was required to move forward. Eventually, I found a small footbridge. Looking down, I saw a narrow creek underneath. As the darkness encroached, I stepped onto the bridge. Making it to the other side, I found a void black horse standing a little ways away, staring at me. My slipping existence forced me toward the horse. Reaching out a hand, it tilted its head back, avoiding my touch.
What are you doing here?
A voice enveloped the trees, rattling the grains of dust below me. I jumped back, tripping over my numb legs. Nervous, I glanced around, looking for what caused the sound as I stood again. Despite my efforts, there was no one in sight but the horse. So once again, I approached.
You slipped out of your reality, yes or when? You must find yourself again.
I took a couple steps back, heart hitting my chest.
What?
The horse looked me directly in the eyes, opened its mouth, and opened again, splitting straight down the middle to form four separate appendages. Each part of its mouth curled outward,
revealing the jagged teeth lining every inch of its gums.
Just as you have come, you should return to where you're from.
The creature then turned, walking away. Facing the bridge, I floated back toward the hotel. Everything was more distorted than before. However, with time, I eventually found myself running into people again. Their faces were wrong, but none of them looked quite real. Larger than average eyes, displaced noses, and some had no mouths. Eventually, I found my subconscious leading me somewhere. I couldn't derail myself from wherever I was going. Time passed, and I found myself in front of a familiar home. Checking the door, it was unlocked. Entering, I heard people talking. Their words were indescribable, but I was sure there were people somewhere. Heading to the out-of-focus kitchen, the muffled voices seemed to get louder, yet lower. Walking around each room I could, I found a staircase through a doorway in the corner of the living room. Their voices cleared with each step down, but all I could hear was gibberish. Not quite like they were speaking another language, per se. More like I was no longer capable of understanding English. I knew their words should have been making sense, but it was like my brain couldn't connect each word to the other. As I took each step down the winding stairs, my brain fog slammed into me again, dragging me down. I was in a haze, hardly able to process the limited visual information around me. Is there even a light here? I looked up as my feet glided down the winding steps, but there were no bulbs. It was light, sure, but it was as if the air itself radiated it. Finally, I reached the final step, and the voices stopped. I looked ahead, making out four figures. Aside from some vague details, they appeared to be mere silhouettes. Two of them were looking to my left, one to my right, and the last just above my head.
Excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt.
My body nearly gave out from under me. I'd lost all sensation, and my voice came out as a rattle. I couldn't feel feet in my shoes, the shirt I was wearing, nor the belt around my waist. All that existed in that moment was my dwindling consciousness.
I don't mean to interrupt, but do I know you?
The one looking to my right asked something, though I couldn't make out any words. A few moments passed, and a stern statement came from the one looking above me. When the two looking to my left said something, they all repeated the same sound. I knew I recognized them, but it was like they were chanting for me to leave. When one took a step toward me, I booked it up the stairs. Once I made it out of the house, I collapsed to the ground, deep panting, until the smallest amount of focus returns to me. I was finally able to feel the shoes on my feet again. As I rose, a shrieking stabbed my eardrums. I held my hands over my ears before suddenly understanding what it said. I bolted, tripping as I regained sensation in my legs. I had to run full speed. There was no avoiding it. As I pumped my arms, my muscles recognized themselves, and my body realized their weight. The head fog receding, I slipped turning a corner, scraping my right side, but there was no feeling. I shot back up, refusing to fade. There was no way I would let this vision, or afterlife, or whatever the hell it was, beat me. I refused to let myself go. I finally made it right, as one last ungodly shriek sounded through the train station. I paused for a moment, reorienting my field of vision. Staring at the train, the door on the last cart was already closing. I screamed for it to wait as I picked up speed again, but the train wasn't stopping. I ran full speed, slipping my fingers into the door, but I couldn't pry it open, and no one was on the train to help me. The train started along, and I couldn't do anything. I tried pulling my fingers out, but that was just as ineffective as prying the thing open.
Hey, help! Someone, help! It isn't stopping! I'm stuck!
No one would even look in my direction. They all just continued with what they were doing as the train picked up more and more speed.
Eventually, I collapsed, my fingers sliding down but still holding me in place as the concrete skinned me alive. I screamed and shrieked for anyone to save me, but just like before, it was useless. There was no point, but the horror of what happened to me, what was actively happening, it was too much. As the train reached the threshold of the first tunnel, everything went dark. When I regained consciousness, I was on the train. I looked around. The blue tint that enveloped everything before was gone. I hadn't even noticed it until it was gone. Patting myself down, I felt for anything out of the ordinary. My vision was back to normal. My head fog was gone. I didn't have any scrapes. I let out a sigh of relief. The train picked up speed again, and I decided to check my phone to see how much longer I had to get to my stop. But a cold sweat overtook me. 11:30. I checked to make sure, but the date was the same. How could it only have been 14 minutes? How am I on the train? What the hell is going on? And as all of those questions were upheld within me, a long-forgotten memory resurfaced as I remembered who those people in the house were. They were the childhood friends I used to hang out with. A tear streaked down my face, signaling the initial cracks of a dam. The ones I'd planned a future with, the people I promised I'd be friends with forever, the ones who went missing when I was 12. I'd made a promise, as I cried over their disappearances back then. Now that I remember it, I intend to keep it. I'm posting this here, not for you all, but for my family. So, if I never make it back, they at least have a way of finding out why. We're not on speaking terms, but if any of them happen to be reading this, I'm going to find Emma, Connor, Olive, and Tyler. I know what I experienced was real. There's just no way a dream like that can fit into 14 minutes. I don't know what I experienced, but I think it was a sign. A sign that they're still out there, and I can't stand keeping at this dead-end life without them. This is Henry Yaler, signing off. Part 1. Friends, family, acquaintances, no matter who they are, they impact your life to some extent. Whether it's help from a stranger, happy moments from friends past, or moments you'd rather forget from your parents. Every single little thing builds us up to who we are today. Some things require attention, or they'll fly by with no impact. Others will collide with you so tremendously that it'll rattle who you are as a person by virtue of happening. Maybe you're attentive and try to accept things. Become better through them and move on. Maybe you deny reality until it kills you. Or maybe you're a little like me. My name is Henry Yaler. Maybe some of you remember me from a post I made a year or two back about a train ride that reminded me what I wanted to do with my life. If so, welcome back. It's been, well, it's been life. And a bit of death. Before I leave the internet for good, though, I suppose it's the least I can do to give those that helped me along the way some closure. I can't thank those of you who sent me sources for my first steps enough. Even more so, those who sent me actual packages. I'm forever grateful to you. And this isn't all talk. Keep an eye out in your mail. Lastly, to the person who sent me $4,000 in a privatized digital currency, send me a new email to send the money to, and I'll get it back to you as soon as I can. For the rest of you, I appreciate your patience. Given this is a public letter to those who helped me, I'll try to keep everything following on topic. I've said my thanks, and I know why most of you are here. Just be sure you have some time. I have a feeling I have a feeling this may take longer than I'm expecting. Oh, one last thing. For anyone who hasn't read my prior post, I will try to remember to put it in the comments or something. The DMs started coming a couple days after my post. Messages about if I knew what energy lines and spiritual conduits were. Some from self-proclaimed psychics telling me that my path ahead was doomed to fail or rot with certain death. Maybe they were legit. Maybe I'm reading too much into their BS. Who knows? It was a couple weeks after when the first package came in. Spiritualism, energy, and quantum states. Throwing the package in my kitchen trash, I tossed the cinder block of a book into the air a few times, questioning the wisdom in ignoring the fact my address had been leaked. I put the thoughts on the back burner's forgotten warm section, then flipped through the colossal tome. It only took me 30 minutes to shut the nonsense-filled book. From what I could tell, there was a bunch of pseudoscience BS written by some guy who managed to write the first 10 pages 500 different ways. Whoever sent it, it wasn't worth the roots of the stump it was printed on. It is currently in a landfill somewhere, and no, I'm not sending you money for a new one. In the following days, I received several books that, until just yesterday, I'd held on to. I'd learned how to tell which ones might be legit by book 15. Typically, those in the several hundred-plus word count range were crap. Since the useful books were mostly first- or second-hand experience, they were almost always shorter, not eclipsing 100 pages. Essentially, if it reads like a textbook, it looks like a textbook, and it feels like a textbook, it's probably not a textbook, at least for spiritual stuff. Some time passed for research in a field of study that was mostly hearsay. Even with the legitimate textbooks, so much was just theory that I just had to combine everything into my own personal textbook. I tried to keep up with work, but in the end, I had enough savings to last me a year or so. I figured if it took longer than that, I'd head off and live in the woods or something. So, that was my life. Eating rice and beans for breakfast, ramen for lunch and dinner. Occasionally, I'd mix it up with eggs, but yeah, I'd wake up, feel like shit, research, compile data, put it into a notebook, and go to sleep. But even after putting together two composition notebooks worth of rituals, spiritual theory, and hyperdimension hypothesis, I didn't have a way of getting back to my childhood friends. I knew where they must have been, but there was nothing useful on how to get there except it can only happen coincidentally, and you cannot enter the gaps in reality intentionally. I banged my head on the book-covered coffee table, trying to keep myself awake. Chewing my lip, the taste of iron glazing my tongue as I considered just finding a new job, all the resources that pooled into my lap told me I should leave things behind, that there was no point in hope. But I couldn't give up on my friends. So I sagged, flopping to the ground next to my laptop. It was open to another useless page about energy lines or something. I stared at the screen, focusing and unfocusing my vision. My eyes stung with tears that refused to break surface tension, leaving my eyelids to scrape them away. Blinking and letting a couple tears streak down the side of my face, a message blinked in the bottom right of my laptop. Gregor Lander. I know how to open the gap. Chewing my lip, I grimaced, closing the message. Sitting back down, I grabbed one of the books I'd read a dozen times over, Mysteries of the Gap. After flipping through it, I'd confirmed it didn't say it was impossible to intentionally get there, just that it likely couldn't be achieved. Opening Reddit, I clicked on my messages. Gregor hadn't sent anything new, but someone else had. Someone with a blank username. Two souls should be all you need to find your friends, but they may not be worth your bargaining power. Be vigilant, and when in doubt, seek out the infinite light. The message was followed by an email and password. I replied, "What the fuck, man?" But the message never sent. The account didn't exist anymore, yet his message never went away. Could have used a bit more info, jackass. Making my way to the kitchen, the only source of light I'd had on for days, I opened the cabinet. Sighing, I dragged out one of the three remaining cups of noodles. As I stared at the rotating foam behind the metal mesh of the microwave, my eyes also rotated, focusing on the cup, then the mesh, back and forth. I'd lost my mind, and my body forgot I had one. Thinking on the message from the nameless person. What's their deal? Are they messing with me? What if they're not? I jumped. My eyes dug themselves out of the pit they were buried in, and I looked around. I stared at the microwave, the image of my kitchen leaving me oddly disturbed. Flinging the microwave open, I grabbed a fork and sat on the counter, slurping the noodles down in silence. The shadows crawled toward me, but any time I shot a look at them, they'd already retreated. My heart pounded as I chugged the broth in one go. Dropping the cup from my lips, I gave the shadows around me a once-over before heading to the trash. Tossing the cup and plastic fork, I slouched back at my laptop, staring at the screen. I logged into the email the man had sent me. Following the crypto wallet link, it opened to a company named Fetch Inc., which had its toes in everything short of bounty hunting. The advertisements on the page were all businesses under this massive corporation I'd never heard of. Once I'd input the information and verified myself via the email, it opened to a wallet. It read, Balance 2.2 Hornet. To cash out, click here now. I scoff-laughed and closed the tab, finding a new message from Gregor. I can get you where you need to go. You down? I sighed, looking at the book I'd skimmed through minutes prior. Fuck it.
Look, man, if you really can't help me, we have to meet up first. Gotta be somewhere public.
As I waited for a response, I found myself drifting the cursor toward Tab Restore. I wobbled my head back and forth, debating whether or not it was worth it. Fuck it. I can click away if it looks suspicious. Reopening the wallet, I stared at the cash out button, hovering my mouse. Clicking it, a window popped up.
Upon cashing out your Hornet, you'll receive them via van transport within 24 hours if you live in North America, South America, or Europe. If you live in Africa, Asia, or Oceania, it may take 2 to 7 business days. If you live in Antarctica, it will take between 7 and 30 business days via boat. If the terms are acceptable, click accept. Otherwise, click decline.
Antarctica, I chuckled, clicking accept. The tab closed on its own. A new window opened.
By clicking accept, you agree to our terms of service, including but not limited to location data.
Okay, man. I hit accept again, letting the notification fade away, along with my hopes of getting whatever money was allegedly in the account.
Reopening my DMs, Gregor had responded.
This sound good?
He sent me a link to a Waffle House. Despite it being years since I'd been to it, the address was familiar. I sat, staring into the kitchen, light flickering with my thoughts as a heavy wind picked up outside. Rain pattered against the window behind the sink. I stared, wondering if a thunderstorm was on the horizon. A sudden gust ripped past the complex, wobbling the windows. I blinked slowly, the light losing intensity. Unable to move, I continued staring at the window. It didn't reflect the faintest hint of light. The periodic flickering of the light bulb entrancing me. Each flash dimmed the room more and more until I looked around. Nothing in my vision. My laptop invisible. I sat for a while in the cave darkness. I was calm, unable to move anything but my head, yet relaxed. Through the chasm of nothingness and time, a silhouette of somethingness and when made its place in existence. A being so large it encompassed everything in front of me. The faintest light emanating from me bounced off the entity like a crashing wave,
sending light in all frequencies directly to my eyes. It grew. The longer I looked, the more blinding the light became. My eyes bled as the entity let out a rumble to shatter fluid. Face melting at its voice, I shot up, still sitting beside the couch. The sun shone through the window, blinding me. Rubbing my arms, I repositioned myself. Laptop in hand, I tried to blink the figure away, but it was stained under my pupils, a scar that still hasn't left me. I blinked again, shivering. Looking at the message from before, I typed a response. Staring to the void of darkness out the window, my mind wouldn't let go of the figure. A simple depression remained, but any time I blinked, it came back in full force.
Can I help you?
A southern lady greeted me to my left. Just a coffee, for now. I'm meeting someone.
Of course, sweetie. Take your time.
She came back a few minutes later with a pot of stale coffee, pouring me a mug. I nodded to her and smiled. I hadn't been to Waffle House since high school, but somehow the smell was fresh in my mind. I'd been to several growing up, and while some smell like a musty ashtray, old syrup, or, on one occasion, strawberry milkshake, the clearest smell in that moment was the freshest bacon, eggs, and cigarette. Her feet crackled against the sticky tile as she walked away, followed by a new set of resin-coated footsteps.
You heal a 95?
A shaggy-headed, dirty blonde wearing joggers and a hoodie held out his hand. Looking up, I refocused.
Call me Henry.
Standing, I took his hand, giving it a firm shake.
Yeah, of course. Call me Greg.
He rubbed the back of his head.
Sorry I'm late. Never really done this before.
His grip was firm, but he struggled to look me in the eyes, darting them around from my forehead to ears to chin. You need a drink or something? I asked, sitting back down.
That sounds fucking amazing.
He sat, melting into the seat. His eyes were like a raccoon with the flu. There was a light twinkling in them.
You, drive in from Washington?
I chuckled, wondering how long he'd been awake.
God, no. I could never. Place is a hot zone.
Smiling, he relaxed into the seat. Seeing the waitress from before, he waved her down, getting her to pour him a mug of coffee. He took it black, power-chugging half of the cup in one pull. As he set it down, he looked me in the eyes.
So, your friends?
Before we get to them, I leaned forward, holding my chin up with my palm, slightly covering my mouth. How'd you learn about the gap? Following my lead, he lowered his voice, and his eyes darted faster, as if I was about to laugh at him. I understood. I wouldn't talk to most anyone about the books in my apartment, let alone the fact I'd taken notes.
Found some books researching the spirit world. One of them had an analysis of empty planes between realities. They called it The Gap. I sent you the book that goes over it.
I didn't have to wonder which one, but I did have another question.
Why'd you wait so long to contact me? Get lost?
A short breath escaped my nose.
I wanted to give you a bit of time to absorb it, you know. Despite it only having half of the details, I thought it'd at least get you ready to save your friends.
I jostled the answer around, tossing it between different corners of my brain.
You alright?
I jumped, and my vision cleared. The imprints of the being faded into temporary obscurity.
Yeah.
I scrunched my face, trying to remember what he'd said.
I guess we did.
Then I thought for a second.
Sorry, wrong words came out. You have the other half of the answers. That's why you said you know how to get to the gap.
What had you needed to go there for?
I don't imagine you have a source on how to get there.
Yeah, the book don't got shit for answers. But...
He let the statement linger as the waitress came by again.
Can I get y'all anything to eat? Or will it just be coffee?
She held a pot in her hand as she glared between us.
Yeah, let me get the 2-egg breakfast.
Greg said, not looking at the menu. I looked between her and Greg, stuttering out.
I'll get the same, a separate bill.
Be right up, sugar.
She smiled, turning to the kitchen, leaving. I looked at Greg, waiting for him to continue, but he just stared at me, eyes gone, pupils dilated. The book doesn't have shit for answers, but... I waited. He blinked a few times, coming up for air.
Yeah, there's a way, but it comes down to where your friends went missing.
I chuckled, leaning back in my chair. The last time I ended up in the Gap, I was on a train, nowhere near them.
Well, the book didn't get everything wrong. You can show up there by accident.
So, I just happened to find them between realities. I remember an old tidbit about needles and hay. I snorted, rolling my eyes, ready to leave.
Look, the way I understand it, people who have suffered have a looser grip on reality. They're more prone to slip between the folds. I don't know why you ended up finding them, but I know how we can find them again. And it all comes back to us going to the site they went missing. Happenstance versus intent.
I chewed my lip, leaning back in. So, what? I'm less sane the closer I am to where they were last seen? He rolled his head back and forth.
I mean, I guess if you want to look at it like that.
I leaned back, folding my arms. I hop in, grab my friends, hop out. Is that the plan?
Not necessarily. We can't be sure we'll be alone. So I'll be joining you.
I raised an eyebrow.
Due to how murky the science is, I don't know how it works, but I should be able to follow your lead into the Gap.
I sighed, biting my lip as I tapped my foot. Clamping my eyes shut, I took a final, deep breath. All right, I'll show you. But I'm a week overdue for a nap. As I pulled into the parking spot at the musty motel just outside my hometown, I noted the fresh coat of paint, maybe only a decade old. It wasn't much, but I held out hope they'd taken care of the bedbug and flea problems. Greg rolled to a stop in his matte red Prius. Hopping out of my car, he followed me into the main office. The inside had the faint odor of bad bone broth with a hint of spoiled milk, which only added to my previous hope. We each got our own rooms and headed back out into the dry, yet oddly warm, winter night. Getting to the second floor, we parted, entering our respective rooms. I prepared myself for the dry crunch under my feet, but was pleasantly surprised by a clean faux wood floor.
I got rid of the carpet.
I smiled, no longer concerned with the threat of bedbugs. The smell inside was like stale cleaner and the bottom of an ashtray, which was certainly better than the copper and vomit from the last time I stayed there. I flopped on my bed, a groan reverberating from the building. Can't all be winners, I muttered, chuckling to myself as the aether took me. I was in a park, a light squealing coming from neverwhere. The air was dense and I struggled to breathe. It was night, no stars, no clouds, just a dim moon overhead, as if the sun couldn't be bothered to reflect the sun's light anymore. A crunch of frozen wood chips and mud resounded as I took a step, looking around. Nothing came into view, and I could only see about 10 feet in front of me. The odor of freshly cut grass crept into my nose as I looked around, taking another step. Looking up, I found a familiar outline in the sky, producing its own light. Nausea flooding me, I looked down. 4 spindly red flowers at my feet, like giant spiders, sat there. Off to the right, a small purple flower. Looking back up, the entity's impression and the spots between space-time grew eternally, expanding a mile a second. But the being had never exceeded my field of vision. Its visage, nothing more than an imprint. It said nothing, only reaching out a hand, as if to rip me from my very soul. I jerked away, breaking free from the frozen ground and sprinting full speed, its existence encroaching the sky around me as I ran, my legs flailing, trying to push me beyond physical limits. I glanced down, avoiding the gaze of the being beyond worlds, beyond the solar system, beyond the galaxy.
The grass flowed against me like sand under a retreating tide. I was running in place. The grass caught my foot and I fell, a rumble rattling my lungs. I coughed, hacking up years of mucus. My nose oozed when I couldn't cough up, and when something stroked my back, my bladder released itself. I squeezed my eyes shut, but the being's impression was still glazed over my pupils. Laying there, I whimpered, crying, not prepared to die. My eyes shot open. I stared at the door. The entity abandoned my vision for the moment. I focused on the door, waiting to see if it was just the thin walls. I stood, hesitating, then snuck to the door, noticing they'd installed a peephole. I looked through it to see a short woman in a trucker hat that said, "Fetch Quest, TM." She yawned before looking at her phone, then the paper bag in her other hand. Pulling her phone back, she reached to knock again, but I cracked the door.
"What do you want?"
Her practiced speech echoed through her eyes as she recited.
"Hello, I'm here with Fetch Quest due to your recent request for a cash out in Hornet. Unfortunately, we didn't have cash on hand, so I hope you're fine being paid in souls."
"Huh?" she continued.
"Sign here to confirm you received your payment."
She had her phone in her hand again, and before I realized, I had the bag in my hand, so I signed. She hit a button, then held the phone out to me again.
"Sign here to confirm you're okay with the payment method."
Again, I signed, still in a daze, the nightmare grasping at me. Hold on. How did you find...
"Thank you for what have you, Fetch Quest,"
she murmured as she walked away, leaving me with an empty bag. Shutting the door, I double-checked the bag, finding two glowing shards the size of toothpicks. Dumping them into my hand, I held one of the crystals up to my eye. Staring at it gave me an odd, looming sense of dread, like the entity from my dreams. I blinked a few times, and with an uncomfortable sigh, I pocketed them. Rolling the bag into a ball, I tossed it in the trash, muttering curses. Really, it was hard to complain. It wasn't even my money. I felt bad for the guy who'd wasted his money on me. Dropping back on the bed, I closed my eyes, but my mind was too awake. Each time I took a deep breath to relax myself, it just spurred more random thoughts. Despite my ever-present exhaustion, I sighed, getting back up to slouch on the balcony. Staring into the cloudy night, a warm breeze blew past me, drying my lips. I took slow, deliberate breaths, the entity beyond coming in and out of focus as I switched between it and the moon. I wondered if I should see a doctor, if it was the onset of schizophrenia. The thoughts made me shiver. Jesus, I hope not. The thought lingered. I'll get tested when this is done.
"Can you sleep?"
Greg asked as he leaned on the railing beside me, lighting a cigarette with a dollar lighter.
"Yeah, it was..."
"Knock and wake you up."
My bad. Wasn't expecting the company."
He took a short pull, blowing a cloud into the wind.
"Nah, you're fine. I was still awake anyway. Bit anxious is all."
I looked at him. His gaze was trained on the grassy sand ahead of us, but his eyes went further.
"Yeah, I get that. I'd never really done anything like this before."
"No."
A cloud spewed from his mouth with the word as he shook his head.
"Not sure any of this is gonna work?"
"No. Well, yeah. Both of those are pretty accurate. It's just, you know, you read all this stuff, and even if you say you believe it, there's always some doubt."
I nodded, and he offered me a cigarette, but I held up my hand.
I'm good. But, yeah, I get you. Same thing with the church for me growing up. You see all these people so passionate, but all you can think about is what-ifs that people tell you only sinners think of. I guess that's not really the same thing, though."
A raspy chuckle escaped me as I let my gaze drift. He smirked, nodding.
Don't sell yourself short. Not everything can be compared to. Despite that, well, you're not as wrong as you think."
We shared a period of silence. A comfortable one.
It was when he lit another cigarette that I broke in. I want to apologize. I assumed you were going to scam me out of my money or rob me or something. You were so cryptic, I thought you were going to try something. He chuckled.
Don't worry about it. I was half convinced you were a tweaker. But I figured it was worth a shot to help you out if I could, you know?
He stretched, turning back to his room. See you in the morning, I said, staring back into the great nothing. He ground the hardly smoked nail into the concrete.
Yeah, good night.
I stood there. Crickets came and went. The odd bat flew by. And eventually, a yawn took me into an exhausted sigh. I smiled up at the now clear moon as the hue of early dawn lit the far reaches of the horizon. Guess we all gotta sleep sometime. I headed to my room, passing out on impact with the bed. It was the first in a succession of dreamless nights, one that still follows me. But to be honest, I don't mind it much. Part 2. We shuttled ourselves separately, taking our respective vehicles to the park. He was following close behind as the sun set again. We both overslept, and now there was an inexplicable chill in the air, defying the heat of the previous night. Even through the heat vent blowing at my face, I could smell the snow in the distance. Pulling into the park my old friends were last seen, I took a deep breath, flicked the car off, and hopped out. The moisture in the air accumulated on the ground, leaving the freshly cut grass frozen enough to crunch under my feet like dry leaves. Greg hurried to my side as my legs wandered off their own accord. I looked around the rust-free playground. Glancing at the clouded moon, Greg spoke.
If you knew where exactly it was, that might help.
Good one. Wisps of clouds escaped from my nose. I assume it was around the tree line, even if it isn't there anymore. That work? I stopped, looking at him. He spun, noting the new suburban homes around us. Several oaks still marked the back where a tiny forest had been just a few decades before.
Yeah, a place is a place. Shouldn't matter if it looks different.
All right, I continued, heading to the furthest tree. Rubbing the bark, my eyes stung as my doubts plateaued. Should I just head back?
You ever astral project before?
Looking around, Greg sat beside me. I followed his example as I responded. Not intentionally. He inhaled, holding his breath, then releasing it over time.
Take deep breaths with me and close your eyes. Shouldn't be too difficult to induce it here. When you feel your mind releasing from your body, let it drift. Don't do anything, or you'll snap back like a rubber band.
Breathe with you and relax. Got it.
Don't focus on releasing tension. Seriously. We'll have to keep trying until you get it right.
He asserted, no room for disagreement. I looked at him, then straight ahead, closing my eyes. Whenever you're ready. Nodding, Greg closed his eyes. As he took in the cold, damp air, I joined. On the exhale, my mind lifted from my brain, and I never stopped breathing out. But I wasn't holding my breath or breathing in. I just was, as the lightheaded sensation left me. My eyes opened, but my physical eyes were closed. The grounds between the mind's eye and real eyes were what had opened. And everything had a slightly blue tint. The world was wrong. The trees glowed, the grass glowed, the metal poles nearby simply absorbed the light around it, as if conducting the lights back into the earth. As I looked up at the night sky, the moon was damp, despite the lack of clouds. Even with everything wrong around me, all my mind could focus on at that moment was that the entity in my vision was gone.
Greg?
My voice jittered, like cups and strings, and I looked around, seeing Greg still sitting at the tree. A bluish energy stretching from his body
as if glued on. Beside him, my body, reflecting light, but aside from two specks like glow sticks in my pocket, my body wasn't producing any light.
Fuck.
I squatted next to myself.
Weird stuff. I guess the books weren't lying.
Someone there?
A familiar yet stringy voice rippled to my ears, and I jerked my head back. Standing, the world was different. The trees from my childhood had returned. The suburbs returning to the small town I was familiar with. My brain throbbed like an anemic mind after standing too fast. As my brain processed the two different scenes, it hit a traffic jam before resting on the old scenery.
How long have you been waiting?
A voice clearer than mine came from behind me. I turned to see Greg's essence standing and stretching. His body seemed to off-put more light than myself, or the trees, but was also a darker shade of blue.
Not too long. Did you hear the voice?
He craned his neck.
Nah, just got here. Kinda surprised you showed up before me.
This is the sight of my missing friends.
Yeah, that's true. Guess I shouldn't feel too bad for myself.
He shot out a dry laugh, then looked into the row of houses in front of us.
Oh, this was a small town. Looks like the onset of the suburbs.
Looking back on it, they'd probably planned it like that from the beginning. But when my family moved in, it was just this row and then a set of shops and stuff in town.
Gotcha. You're in the forest then.
I turned to him.
Pretty sure I heard someone coming down the street a ways. I think I'll check it out first.
For sure. I'll stay here. Keep an eye out on our bodies so we don't get possessed or anything.
I remembered the odd mention of possessions in a book or two, but it was only ever in passing.
You don't think there's gonna be random souls around, do you?
If I had to guess, it probably depends on how many people died around this time. Can't be sure, but better be safe than sorry. Don't worry. I'll keep watch on our bodies. If anything happens, I'll scream or something. Just bring your friends back here, and I'll take care of the rest.
He smiled. I smiled back, before booking it into town. Building after building passed me by, each one in the wrong spot. Most didn't exist, not in the real world. I ran straight ahead, the road curving and turning for me. The road was awkwardly long, stretched, and curvy, like someone wrapped the original road around a pole. There were houses that couldn't exist with physics, and the road had no end. I shifted to a sprint, keeping an eye out for the house I'd seen them in before, back when I ended up on that train that sent me on a journey through that strange place. The place where road signs meant nothing, where space was as malleable as a wet cornstarch. I would find them again. It couldn't have been coincidence that I found them. Not in that tangled ball of space-time where 3 days and 5 minutes were interchangeable. Coincidence was an illusion there. And there was here, and then, and now. A dry, hissy gurgle vibrated the sky, bringing a feverish distortion to my surroundings. The buildings were smears beside me. My central vision was wobbly like a heat haze. Each step brought a new cold to my limbs, and I found myself slowing to a walk, staring straight ahead. The endless ended. And there, a six-story house jostled dead ahead in the ever-when. Each floor was tacked on top of one another, like Lego bricks, some lining up, others sitting halfway off the one under it. Looking down, my legs jittered, flickering in and out like a spotty connection. I stepped, and I was in front of the door. Behind me, the stretch of road and buildings were streaks, like a spider under a boot. I couldn't discern them from one another. Turning back to the door, I knocked, and the ground groaned. Behind me, a shrieking sounded from the sky like a firework, shrill with a bang. I couldn't turn around as the shrieks continued, closer and closer. One sounded right after another and another. The ground quaked. My body refused to turn. I could only move one way.
and as the shrieking bangs whispered in my ear, I stepped through the closed door. My vision returned to a regular blue tint, and everything was silent again. The pans hung still in the kitchen. A round staircase stood in the middle of the room, an end table with a lamp sitting in the center of it. To the right, an open living room. There were no windows, no other doors, just the staircase. Approaching it, I opened the end table. 5 spindly, spider-like red flowers sat inside, untouched. I reached out and picked one up, my fingers warping as if underwater. The closer my hand got to the flower, the further my fingers appeared. 5 feet, 10 feet, 20.
Henry.
A voice tugged at my neurons, like strands of silk, jerking my head up involuntarily. I slammed the drawer shut, sprinting up the stairs. I climbed floor after floor, running against an escalator. Looking at the stairs below, they weren't moving, but I was. After 10 floors, I stopped, staring ahead at the empty room of the second story. I turned around, and a woman slammed into me, gripping me in a tight embrace. Before I could scream, a stinging cold like dry ice pressed against my shoulder. The sizzling accompanied a horrified cry.
Henry, it's been so long.
It wasn't the man I'd heard before, but it was still vaguely familiar. The other voice tangled like spider webs. This one stroked like a thought at the tip of your tongue. It came in subtle rubs until my brain connected the matured voice to another from long ago.
Emma?
A chuckle interrupted her crying.
God, you've changed. It's nice to see you.
She stopped, then pulled away, gripping my shoulders. Her white hair and fair skin reminded me why she always needed an umbrella and sunscreen when she went out.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean... I'm sorry you died.
A blush would have lit up her whole face, but instead, all I saw was the blue tint around her as she looked away.
Don't be sorry. I'm not dead.
She turned back to me, head tilted.
I came to bring you guys back. Where's everyone else?
What do you mean, bring us back? Do you know how?
She turned away again, grimacing.
Everyone else, where are they?
They should be upstairs. We haven't talked since the last shift. But how are you going to bring us back?
Do you want to just wait here? Then I can get them and we can head down.
How are you going to do it, though? Do you have bodies for us or something? Did you kill just for us?
A tear streaked down her face, leaving a black trail. I rolled my tongue around my mouth, thinking over what she'd said.
I'm not a murderer. I just have someone help me out.
So there's 2 of you.
She turned back to me, her eyebrows nearly meeting as she stared with a mother's concern.
Yeah, but he's pretty smart. We should be fine with him.
She stared hard at my face as we sat there.
And you think he can help all of us?
I stood.
Of course. Okay.
She stood.
Sounds good. Connor, Tyler, can you come down?
What about Olive?
She didn't answer as 2 of my childhood friends sauntered down to our floor. Their faces were blurry, the only defining factors their hair. Connor's blonde, Tyler's brown. Looking at Emma, her face was also a smear, but I could still make out the line across the bottom half of her face. Each of them looked at a spot near me, but none of them at my face.
We'll bring a couple back for you and Olive.
A nearly unintelligible voice sounded from Connor.
I'm sure she'll be as excited as I am.
Emma took my shoulders, shoving me to the floor and pinning my arms and legs to the ground. She spouted on, each second her voice losing more meaning, eventually becoming nothing but a dry crackle, like a distant radio station too far away to be anything but noise. I flickered, and my eyes fluttered of their own accord. I tried to push against her, but the harder I tried, the more she sapped me. I shoved against her again and again, but she just glowed brighter the harder I shoved. Sagging, I tried to recuperate, forcing my eyes open. I glanced at my surroundings. Nothing. I took a deep, mental breath, searching for anything that could get me out. Anything I'd missed. Any openings. The door. How did I phase through the door? What caused it? Another flicker in my mind gave way, locking thoughts down to a narrow road, perpetually shrinking. I didn't think. Another mental breath, and I let go of my mind. As I phased through the floor, I was revitalized. Reaching the ceiling of the floor beneath, my mind stirred and I fell. It didn't hurt, but I had to reorient myself. Making it to the door, Emma fell down the stairs trying to get to me.
Don't leave us.
I hesitated, looking back at her. Her face was visible again, tears streaked down her face, leaving black trails carved into her.
Please.
She stepped forward.
It's just so hard.
My eyes stung, but I pushed to the door, sprinting full speed back to the park as tears threatened to break free. My mind imploded, stopping me as something unknowable made itself known to me. The buildings around me were smudges, just like their faces. I turned to stare back at the six-story abomination. In the fifth floor, a wispy woman sat, face blurred by distance. She waved to me.
Olive,
I rasped, a piece of myself drifting back to the building. Steadfast, I turned back, letting the tears flow as I sped to the park. Time ran past me like the town, and soon I saw Greg in the distance.
My friends!
I didn't see anyone else nearby. They must have been hiding, waiting for a moment to take him by surprise. I looked around for Connor and Tyler, but there was no trace. No tracks were ever left behind in the gap.
What was that?
Greg yelled back to me. I finished my way to the park.
Have you seen anyone?
A gurgle like an empty stomach rang out, vibrating our very souls. We flickered in and out of existence, and my brain was overloaded with danger.
Nah, maybe they took a wrong turn or something.
He darted his eyes nervously.
We ought to get out of here, though. Whatever that sound is.
I picked up the slack.
Yeah, it's gotta be something fucked. We can come back for him later, right?
I paused, looking back at the still visible building.
Fuck him.
As I turned back, I stopped, unsure why. But soon, the awareness of pain grew through my chest. As I stared Greg in the eyes, they flickered, along with a bittersweet smirk.
I'm sorry, man. He needed a body to come back.
I collapsed to the ground, and he pulled the crystalline dagger away.
You seem like a good guy, and I hate to do all this after getting to know you, but...
I sank, curling up and gripping my heart as the hyperdimensional entity carved its existence into the sky. My head fell to the ground, and I found it wasn't in the sky, but in my pupils. The creature's blinding significance left me unable to see anything else. My vision warped through every color on the spectrum, leaving splotches of previous colors like after images from the sun.
I've known him for so long. Can't just have your partner go and leave you.
There was a rustle, then a whisper in my ear.
I didn't want to kill your friends, but they would have done the same to me.
Then, no senses, but sight. I stared at the entity that pierced its way through my eyelids. Its ominous hand reached for me, as if to take what remained. I let go of myself as another rumble resounded through my soul. I laid there, my body weakening, and then accepting the inevitable. I reached out an empty hand. I spent eternities, yet seconds, in a vast expanse of non-existence. Like a spaceship in a super-void, there was only me. No possibility for communication, no chance for salvation. Only I did have salvation. The entity that had taken to imprinting itself upon me, he had brought me salvation. A new chance for survival. Everything comes with a cost, but the great thing about gods is that they only require praise. When I woke, I was standing on a riverbed, rocks under my bare feet. A warm, sandy, algae-ridden breeze blew past me. Gnats bit at my legs, and the sun beat down on me in waves as tiny clouds flew past it. As I looked down, the croaking of frogs peeked its way into the sound of running water. In front of me were four spider-like red flowers, the same ones from the end's table. I picked the first one up, holding it up to the sun to get a better look. Strands stuck out past the petals like threads, little bulbs atop them. Staring ahead, I saw four figures. Two women, two men. The river flowed past me in all directions, and I stepped toward it, setting the red flower in the water, leaving it to take its own route down the river. I set each of the flowers in the river, one by one, and each floated off in its own direction and speed. As I placed the last flower, the compulsion left me, and I looked up. All of them were gone. Nothing but fog on the other side of the river. I sat there for a while, trying to cry. I wanted to, so bad, my eyes stung, but nothing came out. Eventually, exhaustion overtook me, and I fell to my back, screaming at the empty sky as I laid there. I carried on for a time until a speck came into view. I squinted, and the speck became a blot, then a flower. It landed on my chest. Purple. Half the petals sticking up, half down. As I held it up, my eyes fluttered. The scenery was different. I was staring at the ceiling. I looked around and I was lying on my couch, my kitchenette sitting with the light on. Books were strewn about my coffee table and floor. I stood, my legs wavering before giving out. Falling back on my ass, something stabbed me. Leaning over, I pulled something from my back pocket. The something in question was the two crystal toothpicks, but they weren't glowing. The fuck? Holding them up to the light, they shimmered as I stared through them. They hit the ground as I grabbed my eye two-handed. The pain passed quickly until a smaller pain rippled my chest. Ripping off my shirt, I paused. There, sat in the center of my chest, was a frostbite-like splotch, the width of a knife. My head fell to the cushion behind me as the memory of Greg shot me through the head, soon followed by the man who'd stolen my body. The fuck is that guy gonna do with my face?
Thank you for listening and delving with me into the dark together.
Please remember to leave a thumbs up and subscribe if you feel so inclined. The more engagement this video gets, the more YouTube will push my content to others.
Thus, the following will grow.
All stories read in this channel will be available on Spotify, iTunes, and just about everywhere else. Links in the description.
Thank you for listening and feeding the cause. We'll be seeing you.